I have static. Good morning, everybody. We're ready to get rolling. We'll let everybody come in. There are a couple of announcements from Amy this morning, and then we're ready to roll. Do you need another test on the microphone here so I don't scare people anymore? Okay.
Good morning, everyone. As you may know, our wonderful office administrator, Stephanie Flesser, is leaving us on December 31st. She has found her dream job, and we wish her all good things. If you would like to contribute to a gift for her, please see Leanne Rigoli, our board president. Leanne's right here, directly. We're going to invite Stephanie to stop by coffee hour on December 27th and have hopefully cake and a card and a small gift for her. We are doing this directly through Leanne because if we do it through the church, then she will have to pay taxes on it and declare it as income if we give her a cash gift of any kind. So depending on what we get together, we would like her not to have to deal with the IRS with that. The flip side of that announcement is that Leanne and I have been interviewing for the last 10 days. We had multiple wonderful candidates. We have hired a new office administrator. Her name is Brittany Collins, and she will be joining us for training after Christmas, and she will start on her own after New Year's. Lovely young lady. Please be sympathetic to her learning curve. It's going to be a busy few weeks. If you need something from her, please give her a little extra time, if possible, during the transition. And Leanne, that was all I had from you, wasn't it? Okay. And I believe that's it. Warm and loving space. It's a good morning to be together. When winter's darkness spreads across the sleepy hills and cold creeps through our heavy coats and our warm hats, we hurry here, drawn by the warmth of our chalice and by smiles familiar and new. Here, for this time, in this house, we open ourselves to reassurance, new understanding, and new hope, because this is a place where truth and love and challenge meet. Welcome on this solstice morning. Come and let us worship together. Please take a moment to say hello or to introduce yourself to your near neighbors. Thank you.
For the wonder and inspiration we seek from sun and stars and all the lights of the heavens, we light this chalice. Please rise in body or spirit and join me in singing our opening hymn, number 352, Find a Stillness. Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. At LCUUC, we work to surround this community with the spirit of love in everything we do. My name is Paul Fackler, and I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. No matter who you are or where you come from, you are welcome here. Whether you were raised by optimistic goat herds on the plains of Outer Mongolia, or by spacey rocket scientists on the marshes outside of Cape Canaveral, or by well-intentioned middle managers in Brainerd, or by part-time idealists in Salem, you're welcome here. We welcome those who have known nothing but acceptance in their lives, and those who have known the pain of exclusion and suffered disdain for their differences. We welcome you for who you are. If you look at the front of your order of service, you'll see on it a heart and a welcoming congregation. LCUUC is a UUA-recognized welcoming congregation, which means we welcome and affirm all people, regardless of who they love or what pronouns they use. Please join us for refreshments and conversation in our social hall after the service, and while you're there, stop by the welcome table to find out more about LCUUC. Today's order of service includes announcements of upcoming church activities, and we look forward to everyone joining in. To stay current on services, events, and activities, please check our webpage at lcuuc.org and like and follow us on Facebook. Now, please take a moment at this point in the service to hush any electronic bricks you have brought with you. And we are glad you have chosen to join celebrate with us this morning.
One of the ways that we take care of our community is by contributing to local food pantries. And we contribute financially, and we contribute through the collection of non-perishable food items, which we donate each month. So if you have food items to share, please bring them forward at this point, or ask a child to bring them forward. And I invite the children to stay up front and enjoy a story. And today's story is called Priceless Gifts, and it is by Martha Hamilton and Mitch Weiss. And this is actually a folk tale from Italy. A long time ago, a merchant named Antonio made his home in the city of Genoa, Italy. And that's Antonio there. And one day he filled his ship up with goods and sailed to some faraway islands. And he planned to get spices there that were in great demand at home. Can you imagine what it would be like to eat food with no spice on it whatsoever? No salt, no pepper, no cinnamon rolls. Spices used to be really, really expensive. So Antonio's trip was pretty important. And when he arrived, he traveled from island to island. He traded velvet for cinnamon. He traded dolls for clothes and leather belts for nutmeg. All the things that go in our pumpkin pie today. On one island, he was invited to eat at the king's palace, but when he sat down to eat, he saw men holding sticks like they were going to strike something. How strange, he wondered. What are the guards doing? How would you like to see people holding big sticks when you sat down to eat? Would that make you nervous? Antonio's question was answered when dinner was served. Attracted by the smell of food, dozens of rats appeared. The men with sticks spent all dinner chasing the rats away from the guests. He was horrified. "Your Majesty," he said to the king, "don't you have any cats on this island?" The king looked absolutely confused. "Cats," he said. "What's a cat?" "Cats are small furry animals that love to hunt," said Antonio. "More than anything else, they like to chase rats. They would rid the island of rodents in no time." "Really?" said the king. "Where might we find some cats?" "If you bring us some, we will pay anything. Just name your price." Antonio was shocked. Can you imagine someone telling you they would pay you anything for a cat? "Well, you don't need to pay me for cats," he said. "We have so many on our ship, I'm happy to give you some." He left and he came back with a female tabby and a male tomcat, and he set them loose. And the rats all ran away from the diners. "What amazing animals," said the king. "Thank you, thank you. Now I want to give you something in return." He went out and he got a chest filled with precious stones and gleaming jewels. "Your Majesty, there's no need," said Antonio, but the king wouldn't take no. "Antonio, you have given us a priceless gift. Besides, we have so many gems and jewels on our island that we don't know what to do with them. They're not worth much at all. Please accept this small present in exchange for this amazing animal." Antonio went back to his home in Genoa, and he told the story. Everyone marveled at his good fortune except Luigi, the richest merchant in the city. When he heard the news, he was jealous. The king of the island gave Antonio all those rare jewels and stones for two lousy cats. Why, the poorest peasant could have given somebody those cats. Imagine what he would give me if I bought him something of real value. So he packed his ship full of splendid sculptures and exquisite paintings and fine fabric. And when he arrived at the island, he lied. And he told the king that he was a good friend of Antonio's. So, of course, the king invited him to dinner. When he saw the treasures, he was stunned. He said, "I am amazed at your generosity, Luigi. I don't know how I can repay you." And Luigi kind of waited. The king met with his counselors, and Luigi was called to the royal chamber. "We have debated," the king said, "and I'm pleased that we have come up with a perfect gift. It's priceless." You can feel this coming. And the king ordered his servants to bring in the priceless gift, which they held above their heads very proudly. And Luigi could barely contain his excitement. He was certain he would receive 20 times as many jewels as Antonio. The king gave him a silken cushion covered with a velvet cloth. He couldn't imagine what it might be. When Luigi lifted the cloth, he was speechless. There was a ball of fur. And when it moved, Luigi realized what it was. The king had given him a kitten. The priceless cats that your friend Antonio gave us just had a litter. Because you blessed us with such lavish gifts, we wanted to pay you with our most priceless possession. As Luigi looked at the smiling face of the king, he realized that kitten was worth far more than all the treasures Luigi had given to him. He knew the right thing to do was smile and pretend to be delighted, so that's what he did. And although he did not get back home a richer man, he was certainly a wiser one. So thank you all for listening to my story today. Could I have my lantern bearer? May the light and love of our chalice lead you all today and every day. Would you all please help me in singing the children to their classrooms? The song is called "For You Shall Go Out," and the words are written in your order of service. A young minister from the sunny South had just moved to Wisconsin, and she got lost driving in her first terrible snowstorm. Remembering good advice her father had given her, when a snowplow passed, she started following it. After 40 minutes, the plow stopped, and the driver actually walked back to her and said, what are you doing? She said, my father always told me that if I got lost in a storm, I should follow the plow. Oh, the driver replied, scratching his head. Well, I'm almost done with this parking lot. If you want, you can follow me to the next one. So that we can hire our plow drivers as needed, the morning offering will now be given and received. Our thanks for these gifts given and received for the life and the work of this community. Before every service, you are always welcome to light a candle silently to commemorate a joy or sorrow you have. But during the service, we share our joys and our concerns together as a community. And we do this in two ways, by speaking them aloud and by lighting candles together. So would anyone who has a joy or a sadness to share, please raise your hand. The ushers will bring you a microphone. Make sure you hold the microphone clearly up to your mouth so we can hear you.
Good morning. I'm Barbara. My youngest grandchild, Maya, she's 15. She's been getting extremely severe headaches, and we've been, you know, running to doctors, and now she has an MRI. And the good news is everything came back negative. Nothing's wrong with her brain that the MRI could find. The doctors can't find anything. The blood tests can't find anything, so we're still looking. But at least we know it's not cancer or something like that, which we were really worried about.
I have a joy to share. My oncologist on Thursday told me I did not need chemo, so I'm very happy.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Hi, I'm Barb. I ask for your continued prayers and thoughts of healings for my sister Becky. She did get through her third bout of chemo this week.
Hi, this is Dan. Candle of concern A family friend from high school just lost their 3-year-old to bacterial meningitis. So just lots of prayers and support for them, please.
My name is Carol, and my joy is seeing all the students returning from college or from world travels coming back.
Good morning. My name is Will, and I implore you all to send up your prayers to the great Uller God to bring us snow.
My name is Eric. Please light a candle of joy for eggnog.
Good morning, this is Laura. I'd like you to light a candle of joy and concern for the passing of Carol Alvarez. She was my mentor and cranial sacral therapist back when I started 15 years ago, a big support to the Milwaukee community for cranial work and yoga and meditation. Young woman leaves behind her husband, Ukulele, Little Rev, and her 6-year-old daughter, Mariella.
This is Patty. Please light a candle of joy for my father, who fell down the stairs in October and has been really struggling to get back his strength. And I was just out there last week, and he's doing very well.
I could light a candle for my father, Philip Rudessel, who passed away fairly unexpectedly the day before Thanksgiving. And a candle of joy that our children can all be together at Christmas.
My name is Claire. You could light a candle for in memory of all of our 4-legged ones that we keep in our hearts.
Candle of joy for the potluck and the caroling event we had on Friday night. It was fun, had by all. A little chilly, but we had fun.
Okay. And we light our last candle today for all of those joys and all of those sorrows which we hold deeply, but have not been able to name here today.
Our first reading is Orion by Ron Yasinski. It's a cold December night, but for a change, the stars are out, sparkling as if recently polished because company is coming. Orion reclines on the horizon as if he really were a god tired of the rut. The wind bullies the trees. I like to think it's caused by the confusion of angels, their wings beating at the speed of hummingbirds, flitting from those who pray for their own needs towards those who pray for others, then back again, never getting anything done. But I know there are neither pagan gods nor confused messengers of light. At the soul of this most beautiful universe, there is only the elemental elegance of vibrating strings. And I know it's true because on nights like this, I can feel the sympathetic reverberations of my heart. Yes, I know a wise man would go back inside his house to the warmth of his family and friends and explain these oscillations in terms they might understand, like the vibrations of the guitar strings he plays as they sing Christmas carols. And failing that, point to the tinsel which hangs from the Christmas tree with the angel impaled on top, and how the strands tremble at the model train as the model train encircles it, to which somebody says that it sounds like Cat's Cradle, and everyone laughs and drinks and feels better. But this is not a wise man shivering out here, watching Orion get to his feet. Here ends the first reading.
Please join me in a silent moment of meditation or the spirit of prayer.
Our second reading is A Few Thoughts on the Winter Solstice by Richard Teagues. Cue the shofar, blow it long and loudly, let it resound among the hillsides. Tap the bodhran, bang out a rhythm for dancing, tune the fiddle, play the penny whistle, let the plains echo with the sounds of merriment. Warm the bagpipes, allow its keening to lead us as we lament the short day of the long night. Light the candles. Pour some wassail for young and old. Gather the clan to mourn the passing of the old and the reemergence of the new. Whatever ethnicity you are, today is a time for coming together. It is a time for gathering and remembering. The horn and the drum, the pipes and dancing, the mourning and the laughing are here for the living of life. Join me in your sacred place, be it a temple, a home, a church, Stonehenge, a prayer labyrinth, or a concert hall. Take my song and give it life. Take your song and send it on the wing to me. Lift my spirits with your tune, your words, whatever little bit of you that you can share with me. For the time we have together today is short. The day is short, and the night is long. And half a world away, it is the day that is long and the night that is short. Give me their mirth. Make me feel their joy. Sing me their songs of joy. The shadows lengthen, and I am restless. I fear no winter of discontent. I fear the winter of my desolation. I long to find the light and airy tunes, but my hopes are dashed, and I am confounded. Didn't my prayer include a petition that I not be confounded? I know I have sung it often. Like the ancients, I await with eager anticipation the lengthening of the days. Play me your song and lift my spirits. Give me a tuneful melody that I may dance. Give me a reason to celebrate and to live. If the calendar matched the sun, today would be our new year. Today would be our time of celebration. It is a time when the days begin to grow long again. It is a time for renewal and to make merry. The worst is behind us, even though our coldest weather is ahead of us. But the sun shines more, and the days are not as cloudy as they have been the past couple of weeks. Now is the time to make merry and celebrate with music. Today is the day for celebration, not this Thursday or the one that follows it. They are made by men for their own purpose. This is the celestial festival that hangs high in the heaven. All creation plays witness to it. Come, join me in the dance of the seasons. Here ends the second reading. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing hymn number 1061 in the teal hymnal, For So the Children Come. Now this song is split between two sides, so we're going to sing what's on the left-hand side, and Amy will narrate the pieces in between on the right-hand side, and then we'll sing what's on the left-hand side again, and so forth.
For so the children come, and so they have been coming. Always the same way they come, born of the seed of a man and a woman. No angels herald their beginnings. No prophets predict their future courses. No wise men see a star to show where to find the babe that will save humankind. Yet each night a child is born is a holy night. Fathers and mothers and mothers and mothers and fathers sitting beside their children's cribs, feeling glory in the sight of a new life beginning. They ask where and how will this new life end, or will it ever end? Each night a child is born is a holy night, a time for singing, a time for wondering, a time for worshiping. Centuries ago, people lived their lives by the wheel of the year. You knew what season it was. You knew when it changed from light to dark and dark to light again. And for quite a few people, all the rest didn't matter so much. Was it August or September? Who cared? How close were we to winter? That was what mattered. The second reading had it right when they said, if we were still connected to that wheel, this would be the new year. The time when we go from the longest night to the beginning of the return of the light. But somehow we've gotten disconnected. Disconnected. So what you get when your cell phone drops a call, right? It's what you get when you don't feel close to someone or something anymore or at all. When the lines of communication aren't really open. You might still hear something, but it's just a distant mumble. We live in a world of 7.125 billion people. A world that we say should be one huge unified web. And all around us is the humming emptiness of disconnection. And at this time of year, we can feel it especially well. So disconnection. This is a real question from a hunting site on the internet. Why do hunters like to kill animals? Are you ready for the second half of it? Why don't they just buy their meat in a store where nothing had to die to make it? Disconnection. A real question from a college senior at an Ivy League school. After her instructor mentioned growing carrots organically in the backyard. Ooh, why would you eat something that you dug out of the dirt? Why not go to the store and get things where you know they are safe to eat? Disconnection. I start trying to find some statistics on this, and there's a little bit of disagreement, but Forbes, Wikipedia, Scientific American all say that 98% of global scientists across specialties and countries agree that global warming is happening and it's being driven by human activity. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has slightly lower numbers and says that it's 95% certainty that scientists have that global warming is being caused by increasing concentrations of greenhouse gases and other human activity. So I'd say 95%. We've got a fairly decent consensus here that we're doing some dumb things on this planet. Here are some words from our Wisconsin political representatives. It's bad that you can start laughing up front. Representative Glenn Grothman, this environmental stuff, this is the idea that's driven global warming thing. Global warming is not man-made, and there is barely any at all. There's been no global warming for the last 12 or 13 years. This warming stuff is not going on. It's ridiculous for the United States to be putting extra regulations on our business because we've got to rein in this global warming thing, which doesn't exist anyway. Paul Ryan said, when asked about humans' role in climate change, I don't know the answer. I don't think science does either. James Sensenbrenner said, I think science is inconclusive on this. I believe solar flares are more responsible. Ron Johnson said, I do not believe in the science of man-caused climate change. It's not been proven. It's just sunspot activity. There are thousands of similar quotes out there, and it's not just us in Wisconsin. Disconnection. Disconnection from what we know about science. Disconnection from the actual workings of our planet. million Syrians are currently attempting to flee the terrible civil war, which has destroyed most of their country. Now, yes, most of them are Muslim, but so are their attackers. Because the bad thing about a civil war, among other things, is that the enemy is the guy next door. Our country has promised to absorb 10,000 of these refugees, so about 1/430th of the total. That sounds like a lot. And it's been very frightening for some people on both sides of the divide. Republican, Democrat, political party doesn't play into this. It's frightening. But let me give you some comparison numbers. The United Kingdom, which is approximately, and I mean the entire United Kingdom, not just England, which is approximately the size of two of our mid-sized states, has agreed to accept double that, 20,000 refugees. Germany is the size of three of our mid-sized states. It is taking 500,000 a year for the next few years. Turkey took in 1.9 million. Lebanon, 1.1 million, which actually were so many that it increased the entire country's population by a quarter. Sweden, the size of four of our states, is taking in 64,700. Does that put those numbers in more perspective about how we feel about reaching out to our neighbor? We have the largest military in the world, and I say this coming from a military family. We are larger than every other country combined into one. According to the military historian Daniel Kearns with the 82nd Airborne, our current military strength is 1,000 times that of the next most powerful country, which would be China. Our police carry guns. In some jurisdiction, they have military-grade equipment. Armored battle gear, if you will. And yet, we are terrified of the battered and war-torn refugees of a terrible war. And let me tell you how afraid we are, how disconnected from reality we have become. This past week, a school in a state I shall not name, but which thankfully is not ours, gave a calligraphy art lesson. The teacher showed but did not translate a block of Islamic calligraphy. And without translation, said to the students, here is a copying exercise so that you might see how difficult the writing is. This was put completely in context as an art assignment. Students were not asked to read it. It was not translated, and in no way was it intended as a religious assignment. They had to shut the school system down this week because there were so many terroristic threats from their neighbors who told the art teacher that they were teaching Islam. They shut down a school system. They stopped our children, the children that are part of our connected web, from learning so that they wouldn't understand how calligraphy was done because we were afraid of a picture. As a country, we're struggling with our connection to what it is we should be afraid of. When children and young adults think that food grows in grocery stores, and some adults can't tell you what animal wool comes from. When losing your phone means that you can't function, and I'm guilty. I don't know people's phone numbers anymore. They're all in my phone. I don't remember any of them anymore. I've become disconnected. When people are fighting for the right to open carry guns in schools and churches, and I say this, and I will tell you now, I'm a hunter. I also believe in trigger locks. People are fighting for the right to carry guns in schools and churches. And then having chickenpox parties to expose their unvaccinated children so they get it over with. Arguing that it is too dangerous for the children to be vaccinated. We might be disconnected. When words like internment camp and registration for people of one religion are used by a political figure and people applaud, we have a problem. But here's the good news. We also have an answer. We are at the winter solstice, the darkest days of the year. And there's a reason that so many religions have a festival or a holiday devoted to the return of the light somewhere in December. The solstice tells us that in the normal order of things, the light will return. It tells us not to give up hope, that things go in cycles. Solstice tells us that we've made it through and there is hope. And I say the same thing to you. There is hope. There is hope. Not hope in miracles. Not hope in a God who intends to arrive suddenly and fix everything doesn't work that way. We have hope in the real power of connection. We have hope in a God that says to us, get your hands dirty. Get out there and do something. We have hope in a divine spirit of life and love that calls us to be the best we can. Hope based on the sound of one voice, your voice, raised one after another after another. Because the primary teachings of the majority of the world's religions boils down to the same thing. Shut up and be good to one another. I've seen it boiled down further, but I'm leaving it alone. Be good to one another. And then go out and act. Christianity says, in everything, do to others as you would have them do unto you, for this is the law and the prophets. Sikhism, I am a stranger to no one, and no one is a stranger to me. Indeed, I am a friend to all. Islam, not one of you truly believes until you wish for others what you wish for yourself. Zoroastrianism, do not do unto others whatever is injurious to yourself. Hinduism, this is the sum of duty. Do not do to others which would cause pain if done to you. Buddhism, treat not others in ways that you yourself would find hurtful. Judaism, what is hateful to you, do not do to your neighbor. This is the whole Torah. All the rest is commentary. If you keep that in front of you, one voice can change the world, and you don't have to be Jesus or Muhammad or Mother Teresa or Gandhi or somebody's savior or perfect. You can be just like every one of us, scared, worried, occasionally broken, often goofy. You can be not good without your coffee. You can have screwed up often. Doesn't matter. This works for everybody. In India, Dashrath Manji ran away from home at a very young age. He worked in a coal mine. He came back to his village eventually, and he got married. But while crossing the hills to bring him lunch, his wife slipped and hurt herself. And because the hills were so high and rocky, eventually she died. Medical help couldn't get there, and they couldn't get her out. He was deeply disturbed. And starting the night of her death, decided to carve a path through the hills so that his village could have access to medical attention. He carved a path 360 feet long, 25 feet deep, 30 feet wide, and formed a road through the rocks using only a hammer and chisel. He did it in 23 years, and in doing so, for the first time, he brought safe medical care to an entire section of villages, and he shortened the trip to a hospital from 55 kilometers to 15. One man with a hammer and chisel, working at night in his spare time. In Prague, in 1939, there was a very quiet British man named Nicholas Winton. And for those of you who ski, you'll understand this. In the middle of the beginning stages of World War II, he took a ski holiday. He really wanted to go skiing. Except when he got to Prague, he realized that this was real and no one was trying to get the youngsters, the young Jewish children, out of Czechoslovakia. He ditched his skis at the hotel and went to work. This quiet man called his wife and told her he was taking an extended holiday. And for a year, he worked. He saved 669 children, that's 7 trainloads, by himself. He would quietly recruit volunteers at times to help with transport. And here's the kicker, he didn't tell anybody. In 1988, his wife found his journals and a bunch of clippings and started tracking this down and realized what he had done. He was shocked a few years later when a British television program picked it up and brought him to a studio. And it was only once he was there that they told him, "This is actually to honor you." And he looked up and they had filled the studio with over 600 of the remaining children who were still alive and who had brought their families to thank him personally. And this quiet man sat there crying. He hadn't realized that anybody considered it a big deal. One voice. January of 2014, Pakistan. 14-year-old Azaz Hassan, who is a Shia Muslim, was a ninth grader at high school. For those of you who have ninth graders or who are ninth graders, you understand how busy being a ninth grader could be. And he was a little late to school that day. He was openly a pacifist, often critical of violence, which, as you can imagine, didn't always go well in that area. And on that day, he was outside the school gates with two friends because, of course, he was running late again. And a man approached and said he needed to get inside to take roll. And the boys knew that didn't sound right. And as the man turned, the young man saw a detonator on his vest. His friends ran. But instead of running, Aziz stood there and tried to grab him. And when he wouldn't let himself be grabbed and went for the detonator, this 14-year-old boy threw himself on him. He saved almost 2,000 students at the school by stopping him from getting in the gates with a large detonator. One voice, over and over. One voice, making decisions, changing the world, one piece at a time, choosing to be good, choosing to live and die for the idea that we are all connected, choosing to believe that change is possible and that it starts right here, right now. Hope begins with you. The light is coming back. Make this your starting point. You are not alone. You can do this. Change the world. Amen.
We extinguish this chalice and know that its light will continue to warm us throughout the winter's cold. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our closing hymn this week, number 346, "Come Sing a Song with Me."
Go into the world knowing that the planet will turn and the sun will rise, and your voice can make a difference. Peace, and may it be so.